This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the One Was Had a Dream podcast. My name is Lee Finch, and tonight I will be once again joined by Danny Baker, and we'll be joined by our special guest, the Crow. Adam Roscrowe will be joining us and discussing his time at Wimbledon. First off, Danny, how are you? You okay?
I'm really good, mate. I'm a little bit, I don't know how I'm feeling at the moment, because I'm basically going back to school tomorrow, and obviously having had a million weeks off, as if for those who don't know, I'm a teacher. So going back tomorrow, having had little one for the whole summer for the first time, yeah, it's a bit weird going back tomorrow, getting gearing myself up. But I went to the farm today. I don't know if you're a big farm man, Bockett's farm, and I saw Ollie Palmer. How about that? Random. Yeah, literally just going along, and I was like, God, it looks like Ollie Palmer. Sure, so I was just interested. Any random celebrities, Lee, you've just wandered around?
No, and I saw James Shea in Lakeside once, and when you see a Wimbledon player,
yeah,
you get all excited. I don't know if you do, but I get all excited. So I was with the other half and I saw him with Jess Eaton, and he was in Zara, I think. And I was like, that's Jane Shea. It's Jane. And she's like, who? I'm like, Jane Shea, you used to play Wimbledon, goalkeeper. She's like, so? I was like, I might go and say hello. And she's like, why would he care if you come and say hello to him? Like, and I was like, do you know what I mean? Do you get really excited, but they're not like...
I don't know. Not. It's weird because obviously having worked at a relatively decent level of cricket, you always bump into cricketers and people who are involved with cricket the whole way through. And they obviously had that adage where you should never meet your like your idols. And I remember growing up as being a cricket fan, I remember meeting Dominic Cork. I don't know if you follow cricket or not.
I know,
but he was a big cricket fan. And I wasn't big on him. And I was like, oh no, this is a disaster. But then I liked Ram Prakash. I liked Vinny, met them both. And I was like, oh my God, they're absolute legends. But my mate randomly met Adam Sandler in New York. And I was like, oh my God. So I wonder if a wonderful guest has met anybody random in the valleys in Wales.
I saw the geezer, you know, the geezer who used to walk around with the clocks on him. You know the rapper.
Say that again.
You know the big clock. He had a big clock. He was a rapper. I saw him in Vegas. He literally stood right behind me in Vegas, and I asked him what the time was.
But, Don't be stupid. Did you really?
Yeah, massive clock. But yeah, it was weren't that. Yeah, but
it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
You're boring us with cricket. Have you seen the Ben Stokes documentary that's out on Prime at the moment?
No, I haven't actually. No, really I've been doing daddy stuff, but I'm save that for the weekend. So once the Don's game Stockport finishes, I'm gonna get on it and watch a bit of cricket. Yeah, I haven't seen it. Is it any good?
I watched it. I was babysitting today, my boys. So my missus was at work, so I was babysitting the kids, and yeah, I stuck it on when they were.
I reckon he's your kind of cricketer, Ben Stokes, isn't he?
It was very good, very emotional as well.
You were a fantastic keeper, weren't you, when you were younger, and batter and all sorts.
He's gone through a lot of turmoil, and I think that's what we forget as sports fans, is that these people have normal lives as well. Like, he lost his dad, he had mental health, he had that
100%.
And I think we all forget that. We all think they're like these, like, what's it called, like superheroes kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, this bizarrely is one of the reasons I was really pleased to have Ad on, as I was really, really keen to talk about what it's like to come from almost a whole different world of football, but also to come from Wales, just all of a sudden you plonked in them into South London. Get on with it. It must be a really weird, be really weird. So that was why I was really keen to speak to Ad today. It's fantastic to have him.
So should we get him on? Should we get our first guest, a special guest, as I said, the crow. I don't know how to make a crow noise. Is that right?
No, let's not.
Anyway, Adam Roscoe, thanks very much for joining us. How are you today? You all right?
Yeah, good, thanks. That crow noise was brilliant. it's not the first I've heard, and probably not the last either. And there's some horrific ones amongst it as well. So it's good to hear.
Any famous celebrities that you've bumped into randomly, or anyone that you were sort of taken aback walking around the street somewhere?
Do you know what? I was in holiday in Portugal in the summer and eating in a restaurant, and Alan Shearer was a couple of tables.
Shut up! That's great points.
Genuine, yeah. It was actually
you hello to him.
Oh no. Didn't say a word. Got a bit scared. Plus, he looked like he was enjoying his grub, so I thought you don't want to be that person that goes and interrupts his meal.
That's the thing. When do you, like someone like Alan Shearer is like a massive hero, especially like probably a striker like self. And you think, oh, I'd love to have got a photo with him or said hello or spoke to him. But then it's like the geezer's eating. Do you know what I mean? It's like, when is that line?
Lee's the kind of player who just pushes him a tiramisu and just says like from Lee at the top.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I remember when I was younger and when the FA Cup used to be played at the Millennium Stadium. Obviously the teams would stay in and around the hotels near where I live, and one year me and my old man, I think it was Arsenal Liverpool, we've gone down to it's called the Vale Hotel, we've gone down there, Arsenal are staying there, I'm stood right by the front of the bus, right, old man's just shoved me through, David Seaman's at the front of the bus about to get on, I'm thinking brilliant, get his autograph, I turn around, can I get your autograph please, I swear that he goes, no sorry, I'm waiting to get on the bus.
Oh no.
Yeah, see, that really annoys me. Really annoys. I nearly fell out with Dom Polian. He wasn't here when you were here, I think.
Yeah, but I know Dom.
My son went to ask him for an autograph at the end of the season, and he was too busy chatting away, and he didn't even look at him. He just signed it, and he was busy chatting away about the nightclub that he was heading out. And I thought, oh, come on, mate, just give him 2 seconds. He's just wanting, you know what I mean? I know it's hard, but yeah, I was like, oh, I knew he said something.
I mean, what is it like, Ad? I mean, you know, I know, obviously, you know, League One might be different to Alan Shearer in a Portuguese restaurant, but how important do you feel it is to be a role model to younger players? As a professional footballer, do you feel that? Or is it just a case of, do you know what, they're in front of me, I'm just going to sign it because it's a good thing to do?
No, I think it's massively important. I think that that scenario stuck with me. And don't get me wrong, when I was growing up and got a bit older, I never thought I was going to turn professional at 24. So in that sense, I think I'm really lucky. But it was something that when I turned professional, I thought, do you know what? The 20 seconds of your time, 10 seconds of your time signing something, saying, hey, how are you? It's absolutely nothing. And it might make somebody's day. You know, I think regardless of what level you're playing at, somebody, you know, wants a signature. That's all they want. They're not asking for you to go, you know, for a kickabout for an hour or something like that. You're just scribbling on a program or whatever it might be. So personally, I think it's the least you can do. And I think it comes with the role. It comes with the job. I think, you know, those boys in the Prem, when they've got hundreds and hundreds of people asking them, I think that's difficult when you see, you know, big players get stick for not signing stuff. But when they sign one, they've got to stand there and sign hundreds, which, so I think at that level, it's really difficult. But I think League One, League Two, you're only going to get a handful a day. So I think it's important to give time to the fans.
I agree. And at the Premiership level, I think a lot of clubs get told not to do it because there's people just trying to sell the stuff straight onto eBay and profit massively off the fans. So I think, again, I agree with what you're saying with regards to the top level. But yeah, League One, League Two, I think, as I said, it would have made my son's day if he just had a little chat with like one of the footballers. But yeah, I was quite annoyed at the time. But if we start with regards to your career, you started as a youth team player at Swansea. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, I was there when I was younger. Didn't quite make it through to their, you know, youth system as such. I was there when I was 15. Got released like thousands and thousands of lads do, you know, across the country and all over the world. Then after that, just played local football, then decided, you know what, I just want to go to university. Went to university. Luckily, we had a decent side. Played through the Welsh tiers, the Welsh pyramid. Ended up in, you know, the Welsh Premier League. And it kind of kicked on from there, really. And that's kind of, yeah, that was kind of the, I say, the biggest stage. Obviously, it's not a big stage in Wales as such, but that would have been the highest level I'd played at, you know, coming, what would I have been, 19, 20 at that point when we started playing in that league.
And what's it like, Ed? Is it, I mean, obviously it's difficult to compare, obviously, with leagues and stuff, but you've seen, you know, quite a few people emerging from the Irish leagues and coming through, and obviously different leagues. What was your take on the quality of your of the football journey that you're on? And did you foresee potentially that there was a route at the end of it? Or was it always a case of, do you know what, I'm just playing the best I can, I'm going to enjoy it, and with my degree, we'll see where we go?
I think it's a bit of both, really. I think it's difficult. I think, you know, people in Wales like to think the standards really, really good. I think people outside of Wales like to call it a farmers league or the retirement league. And I think in reality, it's probably in the middle. You know, personally, I see the Welsh Prem, you know, the top teams could probably compete in, I'd like to say the conference, but definitely North or South, 100%. I think you could take any team out and put it in a North or South conference level and it would do well. So personally, that's kind of where I would see the crossover. Obviously, the Welsh teams play the Irish teams in Champions League qualifiers, Europa League or Europa Conference, whatever it is. And they tend to be quite close games. So I think, you know, in terms of where people kind of see the Welsh League and where they pitch it at, you know, there are some top quality players in it. Yes, you get ex-professionals that have, you know, retired their full-time boots. But I think over the last 4 or 5 years, there's always been a player or two that's emerged out of the league that's gone on, you know, into the Football League or conference and done well. So I think people are quick to slag the league off, but it's actually a decent league and it is a decent standard. And, you know, it is getting better, you know, year in, year out. I think the biggest problem is there's only one full-time team. If you can make everybody full-time, I think it's a, you know, it gives a different spin on it, but, you know, that's probably very impractical.
Yeah, because from an outside point of view, I only know a couple of teams. I didn't know about Cardiff Uni before you signed for us. So it's the big one is TNS, who you're currently signed for, I believe. And the other team was, is it Barry Town
were big, wasn't they?
One where, because we just had John Fashion who come down to the stadium on Saturday. Didn't he try to throw some money at, and that went all a bit tits up, really, didn't it? And then that kind of cost them their place in the top table.
Yeah, Barry's a difficult one, obviously. I think they played Porto in the Champions League probably before I was born, but they still go on about it. Obviously, being at Cardiff Met, Barry were our big rivals. So I can't be too polite about Barry. Always used to give me a bit of stick when we played them. But if you look at the history of Barry, then certainly they would be a team, you know, back in the day that would be considered of, you know, being up there. And I think they got relegated last year, but I think they're one of the teams in the league. And I think this is another issue with the league is the fan base. You know, they might get between 700 and 1,000 a game. Carnarvon up north, they have a really strong following, you know, at home and away. Home, they probably average 900 to 1,000. Which is great, but then you've got teams that might get 150. So it's very vast and it's very difficult. And I think that's another reason why people kind of slag the league off, you know, as such. But it's difficult, especially, you know, Cardiff Met, even Barry and Pontypridd now that are all in at that level. You're in and around Cardiff. And you've got people that are going to live in Cardiff or Newport, and they're going to
go to Cardiff
or Newport. So, yeah, it's a little bit difficult, you know, in that sense. Even the teams in West Wales, you've got Swansea. So you're kind of hoping for, you know, Cardiff to have a home game, Newport to have a home game, and see if you can drag in a few of those fans that are still looking for, you know, to fill their Saturday afternoon and watch a decent standard of football.
So you were at Cardiff Met and you were doing well and you were scoring goals. And then obviously you then come and join AFC Wimbledon. How did the move come about? How did you hear about the interest from us? Because there was obviously interest from other clubs as well, I believe, at the time. How did it all come about that you were like, going to go from the Welsh League to joining League One AFC Wimbledon?
Joe, it was a bit surreal, to be honest with you. The year before,
that was crazy.
Yeah,
it's been mental.
It was mental. Like I said, the year before, I started the season on fire, and then I injured my toe of all bloody places to injure. So I had interest that previous season, but obviously the injury came and it didn't quite materialise for whatever reason. So I remember I played in the Wales C and England C game up in Salford. I was on the bench, came on, scored, you know, obviously did all right. And I think that's probably what helped me, to be honest. Just kind of that added bit, okay, he's done it in the Welsh Prem, but can he do it against young lads from the conference, which, you know, I think a team like Wimbledon, especially in my time, you'd see boys, they bring lads in from the conference, you know, boys that are doing well. So I think for me, that was beneficial. And that, again, I think I just got a bit lucky. My agent, I think, messaged Nick Dawes, who was a head of recruitment at the time. Mm. And he replied going, yeah, we're aware of Adam, we like him. And that was kind of it, to be honest with you. I remember one or two conversations being had. And then I remember being on my mate's stag in Cardiff, having a message going, Wally wants to meet you tomorrow.
So bloody hell.
I was like, right, I need to dip out of this.
Sober up quick.
Take your Mr. Blobby outfit off. And
I need to get out of flares now.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, my mate going back to cricket, he was a keen cricketer, so we were playing cricket in the pissing down rain, having a few beers, and luckily I hadn't really drunk anything at that point, so it was like, right, I need to get myself home and drive down to London the next day. And it literally went and met Wally in London in Chiswick. And yeah, I think by the time I got home, he said he wanted to sign me. It was really weird, and yeah, it was very surreal, to be fair.
So how does it work, Ad, in terms of you obviously met Wally, signed the deal. For those who don't know, how does it work from moving yourself from Wales over to, I don't know where you were located? Do the club support you with accommodation? Is it a case of you just find out a player who's got a room? How does it kind of work? Because it's totally crazy. You must be literally 1 minute you're at home on a stag do, next minute you're playing League One football. You've got to find somewhere to live, the lads, etc. How does that transition work? Because that must be quite in a good way with the right support, it'll be quite fun, but it must be also quite a lot of upheaval. You've got to move everything. You might have a partner, you might have responsibilities, etc. How does it work?
Move into one of the most expensive places in the UK.
Well, yeah, exactly. Crikey.
It's difficult. I remember, I think, say, the Wednesday I got off holiday, the Thursday I signed the contract, the Sunday we were in training. So it all kind of happened, you know, that quickly on the back end of it. And yeah, you know, the club give you accommodation for a short while, and then it is just a case of, right, go and find yourself accommodation. And it's a pain. I think London's probably brilliant because you can find someone, you can be in it in a couple of days. But the flip side of that, you might find somewhere you like, and then the next day it's gone. So you've got to be really quick with it. And yeah, like you say, it was really exciting. But at the same time, it ain't half stressful when you're in training. And obviously I went from part-time to full-time, and I was absolutely knackered. Like, you're training back in, it's pre-season, which is tough anyway, on top of it being your first full-time of pre-season, to then, I don't know, finish at 3 o'clock, whatever time we finish, to then have to drive around London when you don't know London, so you can't try and plan, you know, accordingly. It was tough. It was draining, but obviously you think the excitement takes over because you're there for a purpose, you're there for a reason. And yeah, I think it's more exciting than anything, but it is obviously a pain in the ass. Imagine being told tomorrow, by the way, you've got to move 3 hours away and you've got to sort a house, or, you know, you've got to sort a flat within a week or two's time. It can be quite stressful, but it's all good fun.
And is it true that we gave you the opportunity, you could have stayed at Met Uni to play in Europa League, but you then decided, no, I wanted to join Wimbledon straight away and just throw everything at it, kind of thing?
Yeah, completely true. Wally said, you can go and play in Europe and I'll come and watch you. But, you know, my thing is, if I got injured, that contract probably wouldn't have been.
Yeah, that's wicked.
You know, or
yeah,
it's all if buts and maybes, but don't get me wrong. It was our third season of trying to get into Europe. We finally accomplished it. And then, you know, to not play in it, it's almost like a bittersweet, really. Don't get me wrong. I was then going to follow, you know, most lads that play football's dream.
Mm.
So it didn't faze me in that sense. But yeah, I had the opportunity to go and play in it. But I thought, you know what? I can't let this opportunity pass. It's much bigger than playing a game in Europe. And, you know, hopefully that'll obviously happen at some point down the road anyway.
And how was it? You said about moving from part-time to full-time, it being a massive, massive jump. What was your immediate sort of take of the League One? I mean, obviously, we were a League One squad. We were trying to be competitive, but in quite a difficult league. How could you elaborate maybe where the major differences were, and what did you feel like as you went to training for the first time? Did you feel like, oh my God, this is wow? Or was it a case of, do you know what, this is good, but you know, I'm capable at this level to compete? Because we thought you were, you know, we were adamant that you were good enough to compete. So just interested to know where your mindset was around that.
I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head there, really. I think anyone playing at that level, you can drop one player out of a team and plonk them in another, and it's not too difficult as long as you're, you know, at a certain level. I think for me, it was just physically. The recovery side of it, I found the most difficult in terms of, you know, Monday you're training, Tuesday you're training, obviously Wednesday you're off, you're thinking, yes, I finally get a day off, but your legs are still killing. And then you're back in on a Thursday, your legs still hurt, and you're right at it again. And that's the nature of full-time football. You know, physically it is, you know, very demanding, and you have to be, you know, really fit. In terms of the, you know, technical side of it, I felt, do you know what, I'm actually really comfortable. It's not too bad. But then it's when it comes, the pace of the game's a little bit quicker, and that just takes a little bit of time to get used to it. And then you don't even think about it, really. You just kind of get to grips with it and you get on with it. But for me, yeah, physically, the physical side of the performance was what I struggled with the most initially.
What was it like signing for Wally Downes? Because obviously he had a really good season where we'd done the Great Escape. Then he obviously didn't last too much longer in the next season with us. How was it? Because obviously he's a bit of a character. Did you find him to be a bit of a character? Did you find him a bit off, or did he work well with yourself?
Do you know, I got on with him. I had a pretty decent relationship with him. But I think, you know, when you see like the Crazy Gang and back in the day, I thought originally he was going to be, you know, constantly cracking jokes, etc. But I actually found him to be a little bit quiet at times. He'd still be, you know, joking around a little bit. But kind of when you think about people in their past, I thought, all right, it is going to be not so much fun in games all the time, but I thought it was going to be real laughy and jokey. But I think at times he was a little bit quieter than what I kind of thought he was going to be like.
And then obviously Wally gets sat, and it's Glenn Hodges then who takes over. Did you have a good relationship? Because did you feel like you had a fair shake at Wimbledon, or did you feel, because didn't you get injured at one point as well, which kind of, because you were just about getting into the team, and then you received an injury which kind of took you out of the game.
Yeah, it was difficult. I think I made my debut against Wickham. I think we then played Coventry in the week, and I played in that. And then we played Bristol on the following Saturday, and I featured in all three of those games. And I think Wally knew for me, it just needed to take me a bit of time to get up to speed, etc. And then obviously I got there, and then, yeah, I got injured then. It kept me out for, I think, about 6 to 8 weeks. And then I was coming back, re-injured the same injury, not as bad. I was out for another month. So I'd say from about October, November.
That's rough.
Yeah, so I'd say the October, November until the January, I was basically injured, which, yeah, was tough. And then from that January, obviously, you know, it was difficult because I was trying to come back to fitness. I think Quezzy at the time had got injured and he was coming back to fitness. So, you know, it kind of followed the pattern. He'd play about 60-70. I'd get 30-20. Was doing well. And then obviously COVID hit. So it was just kind of another barrier that kind of got in the way, because I felt like, you know, especially after that January, I was getting back into it. I thought I was doing well. I was kind of creating stuff. That goal was coming. It was getting closer. And then obviously, you know, COVID season stops, and that was that for that season. So in terms of having a first season, it was cut short with injury and through obviously COVID. So it was difficult. It was obviously enjoyable, but yeah, it was very difficult to kind of get into the rhythm of it, I suppose.
It's also hard though with, like, I mean, COVID was horrendous for everybody, but for you to obviously be so far away from home, being down south, thinking, right, well, are we or aren't we? And, you know, you see documentaries about things happening. How was that COVID experience from a footballer's perspective? Was it just a case of just keep calm, do what I do, or do you kind of feel like, right, you know what, this is a great time to get running, or it's a great time to rest that injury? How did you kind of approach that whole COVID cloud? Because that's such a weird time in all of our lives, but for a footballer who's just moved to a League One team and you're just trying to get some rhythm, and then all of a sudden this comes up, that would be a recipe for disaster for many.
Yeah, it was. I can't say it was difficult, because we were still, when the season finished, or it was meant to be those couple of weeks off. So I went back home with my family. I thought there's no point sitting in a flat in London on my own twiddling my thumbs all day. So I went back home, and then obviously it came to the decision that the season was going to be cut short. So I think we must have had, I don't know, 8 to 12 weeks at home. So I just took that as an opportunity to go, right, get as fit as I possibly can for pre-season. So I was, you know, running my nuts off. We were still doing gym sessions on Zoom. So we still, you know, were, you know, a couple of times a week. So we were still in and amongst it with the boys, which is obviously, you know, important. And then, yeah, for me, it was just get as fit as I can, run as hard as I can. And then I actually had a slight injury in the side of my knee, because I was running on roads and I was obviously going full whack, and I had a slight niggle in my knee, but that was sorted. It was sorted a couple of weeks before we went back for pre-season. And then, yeah, obviously we're back in pre-season. It was probably the fittest I'd ever been. And I felt good going back into that season thinking I'm as fit as I can. So there's no excuses there. So now I just need to get my head down, football side, and just work hard and prove that I should be getting minutes in this side, if not, you know, hopefully starting a few games.
So in the squad, did you see any differences between the Cardiff Met squad and the Wimbledon squad, that is in character wise? Did you see, because you play with Anthony Wordsworth and people like that, who are massive characters. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and you, I understand you got along with everyone really well. That's where the Crow nickname, and you scored and you did the bird kind of celebration. Is that all? Yeah. Was the team spirit, was that very good within the camp?
Yeah, can't fault it at all. I think we had a very good team spirit. You know, everyone was together, everyone got on, which I think is an important thing to have. I think you mentioned Cardiff Met. Even there, we had characters. I think the only slight difference there is that, you know, it's a university environment first and foremost. So boys are housemates. You go out on nights together. You know, you're constantly with each other. So you basically are playing with your best mate. Whereas I think when you go into that football environment, you do have friends. But, you know, there's the saying, there's no friends in football, because at times you've got to look after number one, which, yeah, I think is true. But in the same sense, we did have a really good team spirit. And, you know, everybody did get on really well.
Who are your muckers, Ad, in the squad? Who are your, like, your main crew? I mean, obviously, you've got a big squad, but who are your sort of main hangouts?
If I probably look to now, I'd say Luke O'Neill. Yeah, definitely Fatty. probably spent a lot of time with Seds as well in the training ground. Seds was a character, quite childish, so me and him would often be doing something stupid. Obviously, my second season, I lived with Shano. So obviously, me and Shane spent, you know, a lot of time together. Andy Hartigan, still speak to now a fair bit. Then even, yeah, kind of going back to that previously, I said, you know, most people, everyone. Nigel, he's a great person. I think he kind of takes everybody under his wing and gets them really involved. So he was a great person to be around. Like you say, you had Woody, Quezzy, Waggy, Pigs, you know, Pins as well. You know, they're all big characters, and, you know, they'd be always having like a laugh and a joke, and they'd always involve you in, you know, everything as well. So I think the first few I mentioned are probably more the ones I stay in contact with now, like day in, day out. But, you know, there's still a few I could happily go and see and have a water or two with.
And how about the second season, Ad, then? So you've done the first season, obviously COVID. How did that second season go for you? Did you feel like you kind of achieved what you wanted to? Obviously, I know you loved the goal or two, but did you feel like you were in a, you did yourself justice and you did enough to potentially stay in professional football in England, or did you feel like, you know what, you just didn't, the ball didn't quite bounce your way?
Do you know what? I feel like I did everything I could, and I think I proved that, you know, in the EFL trophy games I played and like scored in two out of three I played in, I think, you know. And I think for me, then it obviously came to the league and I was getting 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, and I'm thinking I've proved, yes, I know people talk down on the EFL trophy, but at the end of the day, as a squad that's put out, you still got a job to do, and I did my job. My job's to go out, play, score goal, which I did. And I think it then just became frustrating because I think the September window, Glyn tried to get me out on loan. I was meant to go to Barnet on loan for a couple of months, and that never materialised. It got shut down with an hour to go out the window. So I was like, okay,
oh, no.
I'm here till January. And I felt like I, you know, worked my nuts off, and it was just, yeah, going to be 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, which maybe as a defender shoring up the game, that's okay. But as a striker, what are you meant to do in 5-10 minutes if you're 1-0 down, last few minutes? And don't get me wrong, I don't think we're ever a team that necessarily dominated for large parts of a game. So when you're 5-10 minutes to go, you're 1-0 down, it's all right, well and good, throwing a striker on. But if you're not dominating the game,
yeah, exactly.
Then,
yeah,
then it becomes difficult. I remember Fleetwood away, we came on, and my job was basically hold it up, get in the corner. I think we were 1-0 up. And it was a case of try and see the game out. We were never going to create anything.
Mm.
So it was a fresh pair of legs, get running behind. Can you just keep hold of the ball? So I think the opportunities I had, I feel like I did well. And I think the opportunities after that were limited. So I think I was a bit unlucky, didn't get enough game time. And obviously, you know, as everyone does these days, you do read Twitter and people go, he wasn't good enough, that's why he didn't play. And other people would say, oh, he was a bit unlucky not to play. And I think for me, it's, can you hands down say we saw enough of him to make that judgment, is how I feel about it.
It's also rough, like you said, Ed. Sorry, so one second. You're so right, though, in terms of you're a striker. We as fans, to be blunt, we as fans are sort of like, what do strikers do? They score goals. But in a Wimbledon team that is not having much of the ball, we're not having much aggression in terms of opportunities to score. You get to run on the pitch when we're 1-0 up and say, hold the ball for 20 minutes. You don't score and everyone calls you an arsehole. And it's like, well, what? Like, you did the exact job that you were told to do. If someone said, go and do it, you go and do it. And it's such a cruel, we talk a lot about, you know, fans and social media and stuff being such a negative place, but it must be so difficult when you're literally, whether you read it or not, or however it works, but to literally go, I've done the job that my manager told me to do. In this circumstance, I'm either told to go on because we're not playing very well, I need a goal, which means it's going to be difficult to get the ball, or we're winning, defend it at all costs. It's almost like you must have had very few opportunities to actually go and play your natural game. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I agree, especially in that second season. I think the first season, you know, slightly different. You know, I think especially, like I said, that just before COVID, that period then, I was creating chances, you know, a couple past the post. I remember Jill's managing, almost scoring, you know, managing to toe poke it, the Calus poked it in. And I think, yeah, especially that second season, it was just, like you say, don't get me wrong, we had decent strikers as well. Like,
yeah,
you know, I'm realistic. We had Pigs. Pigs was proven at that level massively, scored many goals. So was I going to start ahead of Pigs? No, I wasn't, being realistic. But then it's, you know, if I was getting 20 minutes, half hour, and I'd get one shot a game when I was always booting it in the corner flag, I can see why people would go in, oh my God, he's not good enough. Why have we got him? When it's 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, if even, it's like, well, have you really seen enough to turn around and be like, you're actually crap?
Adam, go, keep going.
So actually, fans are obviously entitled to their opinion, especially somewhere at a club like Wimbledon, which is very special. And it is a, you know, fan-owned club. You know, everyone's entitled to their opinion. I think as players, you have to just kind of, you have to deal with it. You can have the best game of your life and there'll always be one person that's slagged you off. I think that's going to happen at every level of football. So it's how you deal with it. And, you know, there's no point sitting around and being sorry for yourself. So you kind of just have to get on with it and just know yourself. I knew that I worked hard at the training ground every day. I knew I was fit enough. I knew in training I was training well. So outside of that, it's kind of out of my hands as such.
Do you think it would have been different if you'd got that loan to save Barnet in the conference? You'd have got that because obviously your injuries as well, and as you said, you had Piggott ahead of you. If you'd gone out on loan at Barnet and shown to everyone, look, I'm playing 90 minutes. My game is to get behind and score goals, because that's your game, you know, pace. You go on goal and you'll score. Where at London, you weren't getting that. Do you think that would have been a different opportunity for you if you'd gone on loan for a couple of months, scored goals and shown everyone what you could have done?
Potentially. I think, you know, as everyone would say, hindsight's a wonderful thing. Yep. You know, as things happened, I left, Glyn and Dawsey got the sack straight away. So I could have, sorry, obviously my mother's deciding to ring me, go away. Sorry. Obviously, Glyn and Dawsey got the sack, and then Robbo took over. So it's one of those where I could have stayed put, and I could have had a good end to the season. I might have got more game time, but, you know, I think it's all hindsight. Sorry, going back to your question, I don't know. Right. Could have been the making of me, and it could have ended up being a similar scenario. So I think it's just, I think at times in football, well, not even football, in life in general, you know, the grass isn't always greener. You don't know what's going to happen until you're kind of in that situation. And I think with football, things happen so quickly. And ultimately, you know, it is a business, and if you don't kind of fit the mold, you'll get moved on.
And you finished the season, and I presume, I don't know how it works, you always hear these different people getting called in, but I presume you're told that your contract's not going to be renewed. Did you have much interest in England, or did you think, you know what, I'm gonna go back and play in Wales, or did you finish your degree?
Yeah, I finished that literally just the summer before I signed. So that was all done and dusted.
Oh, awesome.
So it was the January I left. Glyn called me into the office and said, look, TNS have put a bid in for you and we've accepted it. And then it was kind of up to me as to make that decision. Again, looking back, we hadn't won for a good while. So I kind of thought that Glyn and Dawsey were potentially going to, you know, be let go. So it was one of those where I could have stayed put and then had, you know, the end of the season with Robbo. But again, nothing was guaranteed. I'd spent, you know, months being in the squad, out the squad, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. So I think for me, you know, going to TNS, they, you know, offered me 3.5 year deal. So it's a difficult one to turn down. It's almost like a lifetime in football. Yes, I'd have loved to have continued playing League One, etc. But again, even that wasn't a guarantee that I was going to play football or come the end of that season, I was going to get a team at that level again, because I wasn't proven at that level before I signed at Wimbledon. I'm still not proven at that level. Yes, I played a few games. So, I've played at that level. But I think with strikers, people are looking for who's going to get them goals at a certain level. So I think, you know, even the end of that season, you know, being realistic, I think the chance I wouldn't have got another League One club, potentially League Two, or, you know, maybe a conference team. But again, you know, who knows?
It's also tough, isn't it? You're sitting in the office and the manager's basically telling you someone has given us money for you and we're accepting it. They're basically telling you in the nicest way possible, you know, we're happy for you to move on. It must be incredibly difficult for you as a player to go, no, I'm going to stick it out, when they're basically telling you, look, it's like a girlfriend basically saying, look, I don't want you. And you just go, no, I'm hanging around anyway. I'll watch you go around with some other blokes. It must be weird. It's just that ultimately that the people who are responsible picking the team have basically said, we think that you need to go, which is telling you that more or less you're probably not going to get much game time. How is that? It must be really difficult to... Do you have to just accept it? Do you take it personally? I mean, I know for a fact, I mean, I got made redundant once at work, and it hit me for about a million. And I took it I was so upset, because I was like, why me? I do this and I've done that. But from a footballer, you have to be able to accept it so frequently. How do you do that?
I think it's difficult. I think, you know, people talk about mental health these days. And I think being a footballer, you've got to be, you know, quite mentally strong, especially around those situation scenarios, because it can be dropped on you at the drop of a hat. You know, you could be organizing something next week, you and the missus are, oh, let's go for a, you know, a nice meal here, but then actually you've now got change of plan, the removal van's in, and you're buggering off somewhere else. It is tough. It's just, I don't know, it was one of those, I think. I've been out of squads for weeks. I've been working my ass off in training. Robbo had been like, "Ad, you've done really well today." And I'd be like, "Do you know what? It's actually not making a difference, you know, because I knew I was training really well. I was potentially dominating some of the defenders at times. I was scoring goals in training. And, you know, people, you know, some managers will turn around and go, "Yeah, if you do really well in training, you'll get a chance." But I felt like it just wasn't happening like that. So I think I could have dug my heels in and gone, "Do you know what? I'm actually not leaving." But would that have benefited me? Probably not.
It's difficult when you've got a 3.5-year deal on the table.
I'm guessing you've
been back home
with your friends and family. Did you find it hard being in, not playing? Did you bring your family with you? Or was it, as you said, you were twiddling your thumbs in like a flat on your own? Was that hard as well, where you move on your own? It literally is you, and as you said, you've got your teammates around you, but again, football can be a lonely place. I don't think fans realise sometimes how lonely it can be.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I was lucky. My family are very supportive. They used to come to almost every single home game, even when I wasn't playing. By pure coincidence, a few of my mates came up the day I made my debut, and I said to them, "Look, I've not been playing." And they're like, "It's fine. We want to come up anyway." So, you know, by coincidence, I had my dad, my sister, and some of my mates there at the game. So that was nice. But no, yeah, to be honest with you, I felt I was at one of my loneliest points I've ever been at times. Yeah, and, you know, people turn around and go, "Oh, you live the dream, or your life's brilliant." But when you're sat in a flat at, I don't know, some days could be 1 o'clock, some days could be 3 o'clock. And you're like, right, what can I do? Bearing in mind, you live in probably one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Yes.
You know, it's not like you could go out and about and, you know, and do too much. I had friends in London, so that was great. I'd go and see them at times. But again, that's limited based on, you know, your friends have got normal jobs. So on a Thursday, they're out drinking. Friday, they're out drinking. Saturday, they're out drinking. And then, you know, I can't just go and join them. So, you know, it was trying to, you know, see friends as well to kind of, you know, keep you busy. Then, you know, luckily, I moved in with Shane second season and then met who is now my fiance. So obviously that kind of changed. Oh,
congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
I don't know if it is actually congratulations, but yeah, well done for finding someone.
Nah, she's a good one, to be fair.
Because I know you've been back down to the ground, haven't you? You've been, because I speak to Andrew Harding quite a lot. I know you know Andrew Harding quite well as well, don't you? And we say, a lot of fans say, once a Don, always a Don. And you probably get a better reception now as you're not playing for Wimbledon than you did when you were playing for Wimbledon, which is very, it blows my mind sometimes that players come back, get treated like really well, but when they were with us, they didn't get treated as well as they maybe should have done.
Yeah, do you know what? I only felt love from the fans, to be fair. You get the odd one or two that'll put something on Twitter, but it's like, whatever. But even when I was there, I only had, you know, from my opinion, I only really had positive things that were said about me when I spoke to fans. And it was a thing. I wanted to come back for a long time, but I just didn't. I just never had the chance to until it was the last game of the season against Aki. And yeah, luckily Andrew Harding wasn't going and gave me his ticket. And yeah, I had a great reception. It was, you know, it was brilliant. I spoke to a lot of the fans. Obviously, it was the last game of the season, so the boys were down, got to see some of the boys and the staff, which was nice. And, you know, I just went and mingled with some of the fans. And I think it's important to do. Like, I love my time at the club. Still love the club. Went back to watch Oxford pre-season game. Spoke to one or two then, and any opportunity I can get to come back, I, you know, definitely, you know, would still do that anyway.
I've got to ask about the World Cup. Excited? Wales, was it first time since God knows when? It must be a real buzz in the country for them to get to the World Cup. I was watching the Ukraine game thinking, you sods, these boys have got a war and you've nicked the 1-0. But at the same time, we were delighted. It's Wales, you know,
our great neighbours.
How are you feeling about the World Cup? You looking forward to it? Are you going to be able to watch it? What's the plan?
Yeah, buzzing for it, to be fair. I think it's I think since we started doing well in the Euros, the World Cup became achievable and realistic. Whereas I think, you know, I think the first Euros we qualified for, people were like, "Oh, you were lucky." And then we've actually done really well. So I think it's definitely something where Wales deserve to be, especially at this moment in time. I think internationally, we've come on so much in the last few years. And, you know, if we can nick a win against England, that'd be unbelievable. But I think the biggest thing for us is, can we just get through that group?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a bit pessimistic, but if we can get round, you know, into the knockout rounds, I think that would be a job well done. And then it's kind of, again, similar to the Euros, just see how it goes. I think people now are probably not underestimating Wales, you know, especially when, in my opinion, again, probably biased, got one of the best players in the world, I think.
Oh, Gaffo, yeah.
The only player we've got, really.
Even Gunts, obviously, Aaron Ramsey. So we got some fantastic players and a really good squad now, which I think, you know, if you can keep Bale and Ramsey fit and flying, there's no reason why we can't give it a good go. And one thing with the Welsh, we'll enjoy every second of it anyway.
Well, that's like you said, you get through the group, don't you? You get through the group and you just see what happens, and all it takes, you nick one off a bum, or you get a dodgy penalty, and all of a sudden you get through and that's it.
That's how we scored against them last time, wasn't it, when we hit one off.
And all of a sudden you get a bit of momentum. How Robson Kahn with that goal. Was it against the Dutch or something like that? It was absolutely wicked goal.
Belgium.
It was like, okay, yeah. Belgium, that's it. In the quarters, it's like, okay, we're game on here. Absolutely wicked.
Well, I was just about to say, that's the one good thing about football at the moment, is a lot of players who want to go to the World Cup are joining teams to get fit. Like Ramsey's gone down to Nice, Bale, he's down out in LA, and they're literally playing now, and they're trying to get fit for the World Cup. So it can only be a good thing for the World Cup and people watching it, and obviously England going to win it. So, yeah, it's quite an easy tournament for us this year, I think. So.
Yeah, it's a typical English, isn't it? You always think you're going to win it, and then it's hard you know, when you get
Disappointment City, we are. So, what's the plan for the what's that? Where's your football at now, then, mate? Where are you? Have you still got aspirations to kick on? Are you happy where you are? What's your take for the rest of your career?
Yes, yeah, still at TNS at the moment. It's one of those. I came back into pre-season a bit later on because he had a change in manager. Shock.
Who's manager now?
Craig Harrison's the manager there now. He was at Hartlepool a few years ago.
We did have
a guy called Anthony Limerick. He was Woking. I think he got Woking relegated. He was Grimsby assistant as well for a little bit. Let's just say he didn't take a liking to me, put it that way. So anyway, I came in a little bit later. So thankfully he left. So, you know, for me, it's just, can I enjoy it? Can I kick on? Can I score goals? And then you never know what might happen. Football's a funny thing. Things can happen in a day, overnight. So who knows? But for me, it's just try and play best of my ability. You know, can I try? And it sounds really cliche, but score some goals, and then you never know what, you know, might happen. I was lucky enough to get that move to Wimbledon. Not saying something like that will happen again, but you never know. There might be a team somewhere, even if it's conference, north or south, and, you know, something like that might be really suited to me. So you have to wait and see, really.
Are you full-time, Ad, or what else are you up to?
No, we're full-time. We're the only full-time team in the league. Again, that's why it was a beneficial move, because it was still full-time football. So, yeah, still playing every day, which is, you know, everybody's dream, you know. So I do count myself as being quite lucky.
Fantastic.
Well, that's pretty much everything from us, really, Adam. And I think Danny are echoing my thoughts. Thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate you coming on and speaking to us about your time with Wimbledon. And all we can do is wish you the best in the future. And again, Wales come out of the group, obviously below England. We really do appreciate you coming on and speaking to us.
No worries. Thank you for inviting me on. Thank you for having me. It's been brilliant.
No problem.
Now make sure you go and ring your mum.
She'll be
worried sick about
it. She'll be worried,
She's pestered me all day. She can wait till tomorrow.
Best of luck, mate. Take care.
Adam,
cheers,
thank you
guys.
Very much.
Thank you both. Thank you.
Take care, mate.
The Wombles had a dream podcast by the fans for the fans.
I think he's right. Some people did say he weren't good enough, but you don't know what's going on in the background with regards to what he's being told to play, how he's being told to play. Do you know what I mean? He has Pig in front of him, who's our goal
scorer. I mean, the likelihood is, he probably was a little bit below where we would have won. But he's right in terms of how can you possibly judge the player when ultimately, let's be honest, all I've done is a striker. I've just gone to his Wikipedia and I've seen 17 games, no goals in league matches. But when you think about it, he's probably been on the bench for 15 of them, if not 17 of them, run into the corner, chase up. We're a bottom five team anyway. She's going to get no service. And with the COVID stuff as well, that must have been well rough.
Mad as well, because literally we lose Pig, we lose Palmer. We have no strikers last season. We get relegated. You don't know if he could have done a job, or you don't know if he could have done a job in League Two. I'm looking at our strikers now. I'm probably thinking we've probably got better strikers now. But
yeah,
people, this is again why we're doing these kind of interviews, is people got to understand that what goes on behind everything with regards to football. Do you know what I mean? So fans think, oh, right, we've got this striker. He's probably earning, what, £3,000 a week. That's going to be lovely. He can move into a nice house in South Wimbledon or Wimbledon. Do you know what I mean? He's going to be living the dream. Not realising that his family all 3 hours away, 4 hours away. Do you know what I mean? You're not playing games. COVID hits. Probably a really bad time. And as I'm saying, with like Ben Stokes, like there's biggest like world stars in sports that are struggling mentally, that have millions of pounds, let alone a League One striker who's moving his whole life just to chase a dream of being a footballer. Didn't work out on this occasion, but he's
doing
still might
it
do.
Doing it knowing that there's a really decent possibility that he's not going to be good enough, and he's got to back himself, but he don't know. And ultimately, he's going to go, he's jumped up a number, he's already out off his own back. He said he went to League One. He said the league itself was probably Conference North, Conference South. He's already four or five leagues, a good three leagues above. He couldn't have been on a decent whack. He must have been on £1,000 a week, maybe. So he's not exactly picking up loads. I mean,
obviously, you get the rumour mill going around. I heard it was a bit more, but yeah, I mean, he's, as he said,
he's not going to be a big earner for us, though, was he? He was always going to be
one of the biggest earners. Do you know what I mean? But again, we forget as well that we play in Wimbledon, and you want to move into one of them flats next to the ground. You're looking at what, £750,000 starting.
Yeah, Jesus.
Do you know what I mean? You're looking at like £1,400 a month for just a one bedroom flat. Do you know what I mean? It's not cheap to live in Wimbledon, and we wonder why we can't get players. We've got Harry Pell down there, but then you've got to remember that Harry Pell family live in Essex.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
He's probably moved back home, and he's got a support network around him. He's gone and done what he had to do. Now he's back with his family.
It just shows you there are lots of players who are regionalised. There's very few who go nationwide.
And that's
the ones
why
that
you
do,
look at some of the teams that do well, because they've got that pool. Like you look at the teams in Manchester-based areas, they always do. There's a couple who struggle. Colton, but
they've got Rochdale, you know, Yorkshire.
Man City, Man U releasing players left, right and centre. I know we've got Chelsea, but then we've got Charlton and all them teams to compete against. It's a tough one. But yeah, I'm really happy he's coming on. And this is our kind of month of specials. We've got a big player coming on next week as well. We've got the Wizard will be joining us next week.
Oh, fucking love Ursel.
And we'll be talking to Rob Ursel about his time, his trials that he went on, because I'm sure he went on trial with a certain club that we don't mention.
Oh, I don't know. I ain't got a clue. I just remember him scoring, I think it was a hat-trick in an FA Cup game. A streaker,
the one where he volleyed
on
it.
I think he might have been, but there's a streaker ran on the pitch and wiped out the linesman, I think it was. Like a tackle. I can't remember what it was. I'll find out where it was in the game.
Do we
need to do like a little end bit here? Do you want us to do a little bit?
Do you want to talk about Stockport
now
quickly?
We can do. It's entirely up to you. It's just whether or not you want to do something to kind of just finish the episode off.
Yeah, we'll
talk about Stockport. We haven't done like a roundup, Russell.
No, we'll talk about Stockport. We've got, Stockport Saturday. I'm hopefully going to be going. I'm not 100% sure yet that I can. I've got my train ticket booked, but yeah, I might have to work. But yeah, it's going to be a tough game, I think. Really tough.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's going to be... I find it interesting in terms of the way that we're kind of playing. As I said before, I'm a bit concerned about having players at the back, having passing centre-backs. And I think it's a really interesting culture shift in football where we were the 4-4-2 era, and the older guys who are 30-plus have all played in back fours where they're not necessarily passers, they're defenders. And then to all of a sudden ask them to start making passes and pick passing...
Yes.
It is a real concern, because Nightingale's not a ball playing centre back, and neither's Callum Bailly, and neither's Pearce. To be honest with you, Lee Brown's been the most, for me, since he's come in, he's been the most disappointing signing for me. Well, I haven't seen enough of him.
We were saying the other day, it's really weird with managers, right? That they have this one kind of formation, this one system. Robbo had the same. and they'll stick to it. But they bring players in that don't suit the system and think, right, I'm going to put these. Do you know what I mean? Because it's not been Pierce, Brown, Nightingale do not. They shoot with three at the back, but they don't suit the system as in passing it out from the back. Mm-hmm. I doubt Pierce done that at Millwall. Lee Brown might have done it a little bit at Portsmouth, but I don't
remember. He was just the left back.
Yeah, he got forward and they put the ball over to him and he scored a couple of goals against us, so I remember. But Nightingale's never been a real ball player, nor as you said, Callum Bailey. So it's really weird that we've got a system and we've not signed players to suit the system, which we do pretty regularly. I was saying the other day, home games, I know we're talking about Stockport, but home games, I'd like us to go 4-1-3-2. Go a bit more attacking at home. We don't need two defensive midfielders. And then away games, yes, you play your 3-5-1-2 or 3-4-1-2, whatever it is. But
I mean, I don't mind the formation. I just, for me, if you're at home to win a game, you've got to play us out.
I think,
in my opinion, I think you've got to play us out. And away from home, if you want Chislett, who is a bit more industrious, then that's fair enough. But I'm expecting, we've got one day left in the window. I am expecting a decent attacking forward to come into the club.
The problem you've got though is I think Asell's going to be off before Stockport.
Do you think?
I think, yeah, I've got a big feeling that he'll be gone. Hopefully, he'll sign for a Championship or Premiership club and we'll get him back on loan for the rest of the season. But I've got a really weird feeling, and this is just me feeling. I've not heard anything. It's just me and just talking to mates and staff about Asau, and I think he could be off to, say, a Peterborough, something like that, I reckon. Because I know they just signed someone, but they were looking and there's talk of them.
Maybe they're League One, aren't they?
Yeah.
I just thought somebody like a QPR, because the reason why I thought QPR might work is they've got that Elias Chair, and I think he's looking at going. I thought he would suit quite nicely a Preston or somebody mid-table-ish. Again, very similar to Rodonia, Coventry. I think he'd do quite. I think he'd fit there because Asante. I was watching Sky and it was Asau and Brandon Asante, who was a guy at Salford, and I think he's just gone.
Brentford. He's gone to Peterborough, hasn't he?
Is he the one who's gone to Peterborough?
I'm sure he's the one who's gone to Peterborough.
He's either gone to Peterborough or I thought he might have got a Championship gig. But it would be... I don't have a huge problem with selling us out on the fact of we are now in a... This is where we're going to reap what we've sowed. We're going to reap those players, but we've got to get a good fee and we've got to replace them.
Yeah, definitely.
Whether we will, I don't know.
I'd like to see another striker coming in because I still don't think we're going to see Huddling back. And if he is back, I'm not sure where he is at the moment because we've not had any updates. I thought he's going to be back this week, but he's still apparently up in Huddersfield. So I'd like to see another strike come in. Also, like I said, we need a win back, and it looks like that Xavier Simmons is off the Hull.
Hull, yeah, I read that today.
That one.
I think it'll be quite a busy day tomorrow. Then I think it'll be interesting. I can't imagine many others going out. It'll just be whether or not Asau. I mean, I presume he's got another year after this one, maybe. He did sign a big, big contract. So if he does go, I'm expecting not far off the Rodoni money, really. But I presume if he goes, we've got to replace him.
Football's a strange old game because last week I was saying about, I think something special is happening. Then we lose to Barrow. And then, as you said, if we lose into teams like Barrow around us, we need, you know what I mean? If we've got aspirations of getting promoted, then I do think after the window's gone... I can then judge.
I always thought we'd be mid-table. I've never thought. I mean, I said at the beginning when we did our predictions, I said 14th, and I'm not. I just don't. And I don't think there's a crime in that. I think obviously we as fans are desperate to kind of get that. You know, well, let's go back up. I can't see it. With what we've got too many people who are either not suited to the way that we're playing, not long-term players. But I do feel like, as a squad, you know, the signing of Pell, I think, is good. I think Pierce is good. I think Magoma's on loan. I think that Magoma and having Davison as a permanent is good. I feel like we're getting a few players. We're starting to get a few more permanents. And there's no doubt the recruitment's better this year than last.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Which is a step forward. It is just a case that for me, if we can get on a run, but we're just too... Well, for me, it's home form. If our home form is better, we're going to be in a good position, but our home form has been crap and it remains. I know we won yesterday in the Waste of Time Cup, but I guess it's 10 grand in the bank and you just get on with it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I just think at the moment, I think our squad is a little bit thin. And as I said, I'll judge everything after the window closes, which will be 11 o'clock when this closes out on Thursday. So, yeah, I'll judge it then, because I still think we're short of a couple of players, but I still think we are going to do business. I think Johnny Jackson's keeping his cards close to his chest. We've still got a couple of loans that we could use, and I think it might go to the wire. I'd be very disappointed if we didn't bring in at least one two players.
I'd be really, really disappointed if we did
full Stockport on Saturday.
And again, I think all, it's not just that. I also think there's players who need to go. I think Bendel needs to go and have
we
3 months.
This, I thought he struggled against Villa. I thought he struggled against his own age group as well. I thought he had a poor game, to be fair. And we're big fans of Alfie, but yeah, I think he needs to go off and do a season like Jack Curry did and get men's football.
Well, I think he will.
Quinton Bartley needs to do that as well. Zach Robinson Cosgrave's loans are going very well. I had some South End fans in my taxi the other day, and they're big fans of him. He works hard, apparently, and does all the right things for them. So he'll be starting games for them. And Robinson he scored and assisted. So he's doing well up in Dundee as well, which you fancy them to do it because they've dropped down a level, especially Zach Robinson. But again, what we were saying to Adam Roscoe there is that this loan might help him now. He'll come back stronger, hopefully. Do you know what I mean? And he'll want to be breaking into that team. We'll lose New York City, and then he can then kind of break in. But yeah, we need to do two more, I think, before the winter closes and before Stockport.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so, mate.
Prediction then, Dan. Prediction, Wimbledon Stockport.
I think we are going to draw. I'm going to have a 2-2. I think it's going to be another one of those sort of glass half full, glass half empty. We'll play well, but we won't win. And I think I'll take that at the moment rather than not playing so well and nicking a draw. I think we'll do all right. They're sort of nearer the bottom than at the top, but they've obviously spent a few bob. So I think I'm fully expecting it to be quite an inconsistent season, but I won't be too perturbed if the result on Saturday doesn't go away. But we've got to address our home form.
No, I agree. I think it'd be a draw, 1-1. I think we'll go 1-0 down there, and we'll nip one at the end. But yeah, I think a draw as well. And I think Stockport, they've not started great. I think their fans, that their home form needs to turn around as well to get their fans back on. And yeah, our away form, I don't think it's great, is it? We drew with Hartlepool, lost to got spanked by Mansfield. We beat Crawley.
Which is exactly the same as home.
Yeah, well.
Exactly the same as home. Draw one, win one. That's it. We're inconsistent. A bit like your beard.
Thanks very much. Well, we're back Sunday with the Sunday debrief. We'll be talking everything that happened against Stockport. If you want to get involved, come and join us on that. Me and Danny are back next week with the podcast on Thursday, and we are speaking to the wizard, Rob Ursell. Dan, have a good weekend, mate.
I will. Back to school tomorrow. Good luck to everybody who's dropping their kids off and enjoying the freedom. I'll look after your kids, don't worry.
Can't wait to drop them off. Come on, you dons.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Wombles Had a Dream podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Wombles Dream and on Facebook at the Wombles Had a Dream. Get involved. By the fans, for the fans.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.